Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. How did I miss International Dog Day yesterday? To all my friends who love dogs, I love dogs too. Sorry I missed it. But today's Tuesday, August 27th, 2024. We'll begin our 15th year with the radio show in January. We're coming to you from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Campus, where we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030, KVOI The Voice, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, also the place on my website for an incredible collection of podcasts, 98%, maybe 99%. Of every show we have done is conveniently available for you in the archive. For our live line, our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be going up to the Valley of the Sun here in a moment after my introduction of Dennis Hoffman, director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University. He is director of ASU's Office of the University Economist. Some of his sponsored projects involve the construction and maintenance of the revenue forecasting model that is used by the Executive Budget Office of the State of Arizona. He's been doing that each year since 1982. Dr. Hoffman, Professor Hoffman, how has your summer been?
Doing fine, Bill. How about yours?
Very well, thank you. We are on the verge of some interest rate cuts. Before we get to that, I'm just curious, how have we been doing over the last 5 or 6 weeks since we've talked to you about revenue coming into the state of Arizona?
We're doing fine. There's no real surprises. It's not a real active time of year in terms of tax revenue flows. The sales tax was okay in July. Nothing to get too excited about one way or the other, but we're expecting, for some institutional reasons, a pretty good August. Not that the economy's changing that much, but the flow should be good in August, and that should get us back on track for a reasonable revenue year.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of revenue coming in from the tourism industry either, do we, in the summertime up in the valley or really here in Tucson either.
No,
we
try. not a lot of tourists coming in from out of state, and many of our own folks turning into tourists and, descending on the beaches of California.
Let's talk about this impending rate reduction, the rate hike. A lot of pent-up demand, Professor, in your opinion?
Well, it'll be good news for the housing market, good news for consumer durables like automobiles. It's been some time coming. I think the history books are going to show that the COVID experience really hit the world economies very, very hard. You know, our inflation experience mirrors almost every other country I can find in the developed world. And, various central banks have tried to fight it in various ways. Most have been pretty successful, although their economies are growing slower than ours in general. I think our economy has weathered the storm really pretty well. But it's good if we could avoid, Bill, going through another COVID episode, because what started out is, of course, massive goods inflation. We sat at home and ordered off Amazon and drove the price of a short supply of goods up dramatically. And that quickly morphed into higher labor costs, which is in turn raised service prices. And so services inflation is still with us to some degree. Goods inflation is now negative. The whole thing is moderating pretty much on track, and we're going to see interest rate cuts going forward from the Fed. And our folks working in the housing sector are going to really like that.
We have become, in the Tucson area, we're looking more and more like we're an economy, I don't want to say entirely based, but the development on the industrial side has been warehouse These Amazon type fulfillment centers have really been taking off. That really continue, even though there is a kind of moving away from that, like we saw in the pandemic. It is still the future, isn't it, Professor Hoffman?
Well, indeed, merchandising in that vector is certainly the way merchandise is going to go. I would say that the Tucson economy, though, with the strength of the U of A and the base of the medical and pharmaceutical research that you have in the Tucson Metro, coupled with, of course, the stalwart of Raytheon with aerospace defense, really gives you an underpinning there in Tucson that, is envied by many metros across the nation.
You know, we talked a couple of sessions ago about water and the growing need for the water to sustain, and electricity for that matter, these Taiwan chip companies and all of that are building up there. How much water do they need? And they need a ton of electricity, don't they?
But, you know, they need power and they need water. And water, we have a water issue in the state to the degree that, candidly, Bill, it's not allocated very efficiently. It's allocated based upon rights that were established, nearly 100 years ago or over 100 years ago, even before statehood. The agricultural community, and I understand it's traditional and it's deep rooted in the state, just simply uses a lot of water. And if water was priced at the rate it could command today for everyone, the allocation might be a little bit different. And so I think it's less about worrying about whether or not our new industrial base, a new manufacturing base, is kind of over-consuming water, which is not one of my worries, by the way. I'd be thinking more and more about, more efficient ways of managing agriculture and allocating water across the state. But power, there's another issue. How are we going to continue to deliver power to not only these manufacturing facilities, but the people that want to come to our state, both Tucson, Phoenix, and in our rural communities, and find jobs? And so servicing them with power, I think, is got to be a constant concern.
All right. Before we let you go, the next time we have you on the show, we probably will have had the rate increase. We're talking about anywhere.
Well, not a rate increase.
Excuse me.
We're going the other way.
Yeah,
hopefully.
Excuse me, not rate increase. I'm so used to thinking in those terms. After several years of, rates going up, they're actually going to be going down now.
Indeed.
We'll have a better idea the next time we talk to you, see where we're at in that area. But generally, we're doing okay with the economy right now in Arizona.
We are. And contrary to, some loud voices coming from certain sectors, the economy in Arizona is alive and well, doing fine. I wish it all the benefits accrued to every family across the state. That would be great, but they're definitely accruing to many, many families right now, and we've just got to do our best to continue to grow this economy so that benefits accrue to all.
All right, Dr. Hoffman, Professor Hoffman, always a pleasure. We will catch up with you in early autumn. Thank you, sir.
All right, Bill, be well. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Dennis Hoffman from up at ASU, where he is the director of the L. William Seidman Research Institute at the W.P. Carey School of Business at ASU. Shelley Fishman's with me in studio, and things are, pretty much steady as she goes on the markets. Nothing exciting there, but we've got some other areas to explore with Shelley that I think our listeners we'll find very interesting today. Stay with us. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And here he is, Mr. Shelly Fishman. Hey, Shell, how are you?
I'm well today. How are you, Bill?
Doing well. It's always interesting to hear Professor Hoffman, who we respect very much, his opinions. But he said something kind of jumped out, I think, at both of us, that growth is good, pretty much. What do you say?
Growth is good for everyone.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I usually agree with everything
Dr. Hoffman says.
Yeah.
And I was agreeing, and shaking my head. And then he said,
growth.
Well, so far the benefits have not spread to all Arizona families. But growth is good, and eventually it will. That's trickle down, Bill.
Yeah.
It has never worked. It won't work. We've been told that growth is the thing that will keep society well equalized.
Yeah, we've heard that before. Yeah.
So growth over the past 40 years has, and I've said this probably couple of dozen times on this program. All of it has gone to the top 10% of earners over the past 40 years. GDP growth has not trickled down.
Yeah.
It has not been distributed. And it ain't an accident. And that's where my head is coming around, that more and more I'm realizing that the policies that have caused all that growth to trickle up mm-hmm. and not down mm-hmm. are not an accident. We have engineered it. My generation, your generation, has engineered it in such a way that the elites and the neo-elites have decided we're going to keep it all to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Most of that growth, by the way, has gone not only to the top 10%, but to the older members of the population in that top 10%. We, the baby boomers, are the richest generation ever. And we've found ways to preserve that wealth where the younger generation, the generations that have followed us, have been more and more disadvantaged by the policies we've put in place. And, you know, some of it is deliberate, like reducing, tax rates from 93% at the top down to, what is it now, 37%.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is deliberate, like, you know, taking what should be free colleges paid by taxpayers
mm-hmm.
In the public sector and charging high tuitions in those colleges. So we've done this quite deliberately to preserve our elitist status.
It's set up an elitist economy, too.
It really has.
It really has.
Can I give you an example?
Sure. Go ahead.
And for some of this analysis, I thank a professor from NYU whose name is Scott Galloway, he's a marketing professor, but he's really taken on this idea that men are being disadvantaged now. Young men are being disadvantaged. And he's taken it to try to figure out what's going on. Why are men not getting married? Why are we not having families? Why is our population growth, shrinking despite, you know, the armies of immigrants that are surging over our borders? That's, of course, not nonsense. But what he is trying to do is figure out why. What are the causes of the anger and
the disenchantment?
The disenchantment,
yeah.
Great word, mm-hmm. In our younger generations, and he has come to the conclusion that we have figured out ways. We, my generation, have figured out ways to stop wealth from moving across the society, but rather moving to the top of society. Let me give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
So Harvard University, pretty good college,
mm-hmm.
okay, has a trust fund
mm-hmm.
that it, you know, is an endowment fund.
Mm-hmm.
What would you guess that endowment fund is worth end of 2023?
Hundreds of billions.
No. But it's 51. It's $51
okay.
billion. Dollars.
Okay.
In the Harvard Trust, it's one of the highest. Is one of the highest trust funds.
51
in a
billion?
Private university.
Oh,
51
billion. Goodness.
Now, if I take that money and I invest it, you know, in a conservative investment appropriate for an endowment fund, let's say I earn 6% on that, so that's $300 million, give or take, a year, in earnings on my trust fund. How many dollars of taxes do I pay on those earnings?
Very little.
None.
Oh,
none. Yeah, okay. Harvard has, you know, it's completely tax exempt from earnings.
That just doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right. No. But let's take a look at that $300 million. What do they do with it?
Yeah.
Well, we don't know what they do with it. But if I take a look at, and by the way, what percentage would you believe of applications to Harvard get actually accepted?
Probably less than 10%.
It's much less. It's between 3 and 4%.
Okay.
So if you were to take $300 million and divide it by what Harvard says it costs to go to Harvard mm-hmm. as a matriculated student, that's about $63,000 a year in mm-hmm. tuition. Now, I can't afford $63,000 mm-hmm. a year, and certainly not when I was a student.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you do that simple division, you could accept another 4,700 students mm-hmm. with what you earn just from the earnings on your trust fund.
Mm-hmm.
That would help a lot of people who aren't going to Harvard
mm-hmm.
and are being kept away from that elite status
mm-hmm.
By Harvard policy.
Instead, these kids are racking up huge, almost lifetime debt
to go to college.
To go to college.
And not to Harvard.
Right.
Okay, so at $15,000 a year tuition,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, about what it costs to go to U of A,
mm-hmm.
that's 20,000 students.
Mm.
Fully backed
mm-hmm.
By that money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the top 20 private institutions, it's not 20 times 50 billion.
But can Harvard's you imagine a small tax even on all university and college endowments?
Well, if you were to tax, let's say at 25%, those endowments.
Yeah.
Let's say Harvard said, "Well, that's, you know, it's my business. I'm not going to give you that money." Okay, fine. You lose your tax free status.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's about if you were to tax that $300 million at around 25%, that's about $15 or $20 million a year that you would take and put into the tax coffers. Now, how many students could you pay for in the public sector post high school education? How much of a benefit to, say, national service programs could you pay with all of those endowment funds if you tax them, or if you incented colleges to use those endowment funds, the earnings on those endowment funds, to actually kick back into society so that we don't create just new neo-elitists, we actually bring people into the middle class. So that's one very small way that we have created policies that weren't necessarily intended to disadvantage people who are not in the elite, but have that effect. And you know, we've talked to Dr. Hoffman about tax policy in the states, certainly in Arizona, and we keep on cutting taxes in Arizona,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and giving away money to people who already are paying for private public schools, and we're giving them more money.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we are disadvantaging people from going to, you know, post high school educational institutions, either community colleges or 4-year colleges, which should be free or close to free. And instead, those who are going are just amassing tremendous amounts of debt, and those who aren't going are bitter about it, and they should be bitter about it. And then, of course, you have, you know, those people who take a look at that bitterness have correctly diagnosed the bitterness as anger and play into that anger.
Mm. Listener Michael, who we've had encounters with before, he says, "Wow, Bill, you and Fishman have some serious wealth envy. Come on."
Oh, let me make it perfectly clear. I'm one of those elitists. You're one of those elitists, Bill. We've taken advantage. When we were coming of age, mm-hmm. the policies that exist today didn't exist then. We got the advantage of the GI Bill. We got the advantage of free state schools. I mean, I went to City College in New York, which is free tuition as a mm-hmm. New York resident, with a state scholarship. Now, I blew it after a year, but I figured out a way to get back, and then I got my corporation to pay for the rest of my tuition, you know, both at the master's and the doctoral level. So, you know, there are ways you do it if you can, but we could because it was available for us. So I don't have wealth envy. I am one of those elitist people. And what I am complaining about is the fact that such a large percentage of our population is not being permitted to enter the middle class and rise through the middle class. That's the problem. And we have some really intelligent people now beginning to see that problem. Some of them are just seeing, you know, the symptoms. J.D. Vance is a perfect example. He sees the dissolution of the family, and he says, that's the problem. It's not. It's a symptom. The problem is that we have figured out how to disadvantage, you know, easily half of our population and keep them from joining the middle class and enjoying the American dream. That's going to be the focus of a lot of what I'm studying and a lot of the work that I'm doing now, because, quite frankly, I just find it alarming.
Mm. Isn't there some figure that under 40s, the percentage of people under 40 living alone is like half of the population under 40 in this country?
I heard the number.
Yeah.
Scott Galloway, a professor at NYU, says 38% of people between 20 and 40 are living alone. Now, if that number is correct, it explains why we're not having babies. Mm-hmm. It explains why people are alone and bitter. Mm-hmm. It's got to be fixed. And this is a problem that somehow has to be fixed in many ways, socially, but also with money.
All right. Shelley Fishman, thanks, Shell. Have a great week.
See you later.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Green Thing's the perfect place to refresh your garden after, for some people, luckily, it was not the case up at my home this year, but it certainly was last summer from some of the hailstorms that we had just devastated my backyard garden last year. But a lot of people are going to need some replacement for the garden, some beautiful color. How about Green Things? 13-acre site, also home to Zocalo Village, all the beautiful merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. They are open daily. They're in their 53rd year of business. When we do our telephone interviews, that live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Approximately once a month, we are delighted to welcome back to our program Dr. Albrecht Clausen, the renowned scholar of medieval history, and someone who I believe fits the description of a true Renaissance man. Dr. Clausen, a University of Arizona distinguished professor of German studies who has published 130 scholarly books. The number keeps growing every time I interview him. I think it's still about 130. Hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with a dozen volumes of poetry, four volumes of essays and textbooks, including a handbook on medieval studies. He has been honored with many awards, including the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions in recognition of outstanding service to German studies. Dr. Clausen, the editor-in-chief of the international online journal Humanities. His most recent book is titled Nature in the Middle Ages and Early Modern Times, an exploration of a critical relationship. He also contributed to a recent international article about why medieval women sometimes had to fight with bloody consequences in combat. Dr. Clausen is he was a recent Fulbright scholar, and I guess, Dr. Clausen, once you're a Fulbright scholar, you're always a Fulbright scholar.
That's right.
You were over in, spent your time on Fulbright over in Cairo in the fall of 2022. We have a lot to unpack today, but I do want to, before we get into the book and some other areas, kind of pick up on a theme that we've had here on the show today about higher education and perhaps finding a way, and I don't know, Shelley Fishman had some great ideas about taxing these endowments. He brought up the fact that the endowment at Harvard is $51 billion. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but what are your thoughts about higher education for all being relatively free or almost free?
Thank you very much, first of all, for having me on the show. I'm very happy to talk with you about these issues. And there are so many things, I think, from a humanistic point of view, need to be addressed. So education, higher education, there is a certain disconnect in our logic. We all believe that our future depends on young people making their way through the education system so that they can become nurses, architects, doctors, engineers, and so forth, teachers, you name it. And we all believe that at least the high schools should be free, and they are mostly, but of course there are increasingly attempts to make them private with the voucher system, which I find very highly problematic. But anyway, the universities live all by their capitalistic system, and I cannot change that, but certainly there's an odd disconnect, because let's say my son, he had high grades in high school, and so he got a free ride for 4 years plus a fellowship. And there are many of these too. So we should not forget that even very dirt poor people can make it to Harvard. become medical doctors if they have the right grades. However, the entire system is weak because the high schools are no longer really getting the support. I mentioned the voucher system, which I oppose. It is, for me, the breaching of the separation of church and state, and the public money should go only to public schools, not to private schools. So that is already a disconnect we are all facing. So if we had much better high schools, for example, or middle schools, and frankly, kindergarten and elementary schools, all that needs to go hand in hand, then we would have a much higher and better educated class of young people. And I think they would absolutely deserve to get a free ride at the university based on qualifications, hard work, earning their way, but not through money. Think about it. We have lots of people, let's say medical doctors, who are burdened with $1 million debt for the rest of their life just because of the university charges. That is insane. And then, of course, it has a trickle-down effect because the doctors, for example, or pharmacists have to charge so much to pay off their debt. And so we ultimately have to pay the high prices because, you know, the entire system works that way. There's a contradiction. It doesn't really make sense in my opinion.
It's all built on debt.
Yes, that's all that. Because once you have debt, you pay interest, and that's what the banks really live on.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the post-capitalistic society, which no longer really works with labor, but rather with service. And so to crack that huge riddle, I don't know, but you're absolutely right. This is a problem our society needs to handle. We have an increasing number of students. Actually, right now, we have a record number of new students.
Yes,
first
at the university.
Generation of students. Wonderful. So I don't know how they do it financially. Of course, there's a huge amount of grants and credits and loans. But ultimately, whether they can sustain that over 4 years, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a heavy burden we put on the shoulders of these young people. And I feel really bad about that.
Mm-hmm. And necessarily, the government paying total like in Europe, that's not the end all either.
Well, in Europe, you have often then the entire university paid for by
sure.
the government. But that often has then the side effect that the bureaucracy becomes very strong. And no one really has the incentive to do good research, for example, because you're paid for your just standard bureaucratic status. And whether you write 10 books or 100 books, no one cares ultimately because you are paid by the bureaucratic mm-hmm. standards. That's not the best either. And the side effect is that many, many students just spend their time without really working hard to achieve their goals because mm-hmm. they have no incentive to mm-hmm. complete. So I see two different models. Both have their advantages and disadvantages. After all, keep in mind, the American universities continue to be the very best in the entire world. That is undoubtedly the case. Maybe because of the money, I don't know. But we are still the very best universities. And know this from an international comparison, at least the way how we educate our students. That's the reason why we have so many students from abroad or from California or Texas or wherever they might come from. Because they understand the value of education.
And so, in the new school year has begun, is the humanities still an attractive area?
I would say so. I just taught my course today, and I have a record number of students. I have 105 students in one class, which is huge for a humanities course. But I think that's good because thereby I can reach a lot of young students, freshmen, people who are for the first time at the university. And based on my decades-old of long experience of teaching, I hope to share with them some values, critical thinking, understanding, moving into adult life.
And probably some of those students in your class have no real idea about what humanities is all about. And I'm sure you probably... Today was the first class? Is that correct?
Yeah, it was the first class.
You set the tone, right?
Absolutely, because basically in one course that deals with, it's a funny, facetious topic, eroticism and love in the Middle Ages. And I'm telling them basically, look, you can be the best in algebra. You can make a lot of money as a business manager or as an engineer. But then you come home and you're alone. Wait, come on, something's missing. You know, you lost Anne. You remember decades of love.
Of course.
That made your whole life worth living.
Yep.
If you are alone, you don't have love, then why do you live? What do you make with all that money? You can travel all the world over alone? Mm-hmm. That is such a terrible scenario for me. I cannot even imagine that. So I was trying to tell my students, this is the spice that makes life worth living. Without that, it's all bland and boring and meaningless. But I also said it's a hard labor. It's a struggle for the entire life. I'm sure you remember how many times you might have had, let's say, a fight with Anne or a disagreement or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, this is typical for people.
But part of life,
Oh, yeah, that's part of life. Mm-hmm. And so, in a way, the humanities, in my sense at least, offers some perspectives about the essence of life, a good life, a deep life, where they really become adults and understand what it entails.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. More with Dr. Claassen. Always a pleasure to have him on the show, and I want to hear a little bit about his new book. Many people think Professor Environmentalism began with Earth Day. What, about 40 or 50 years ago? No, it was a topic in the Middle Ages. We'll talk about that right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com in Zocalo Village.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. You know, the weather is changing, thank goodness, right? Perfect time of year to go over to a beautiful area of New Mexico, and it's only about a three-hour drive. We send a lot of our listeners over to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, southeast portion of the Land of Enchantment. Their elevation is about a mile high, so it's around 5,500 feet. It really does make a difference. You're going to have some, this time of year right now, pleasantly cool evenings and moderately warm days, probably in the around 90 degrees, something like that, upper 80s. Perfect time of year to go make that trip over to Silver City. And start your planning by visiting their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our conversation with Dr. Albrecht Clausen. We love to have Dr. Clausen on the show. He is a distinguished professor of German studies and so much more. He's very prolific, to say the least, this Fulbright scholar. His latest book, Nature in the Middle Ages and Early Modern Times. So I guess there was somewhat of an environmental movement even then, Dr. Clausen.
Well, absolutely, yes. I mean, first of all, there were natural catastrophes, for example, flooding, hurricanes, wildfires, and so forth. So people always had to engage with nature. The critical question we are raising, however, was more the intellectual interaction with nature and how people perceived nature spiritual terms, living with nature in a much more holistic fashion, trying to understand the symbolism of plants and so forth. We are slowly coming back to that, and I think in a very good way. Let's say when we're looking for medication or healing, instead of just simply chemical processes trying to live with nature and according to nature. Of course, in the Middle Ages, they had much less understanding and many less means to work with medicine. But they had an incredible better understanding of plants, herbs, and so forth, with which they achieved their own miraculous healing.
They had their own form of physicians, too, that dealt with the natural elements, right, in their curing?
Very interesting. He had a lot of women. A lot of women were particularly involved in the healing process, like Hildegard of Bingen, a very famous abbess in Germany. Very famous, actually, until today. Her own garden is still regarded as a major site of herbal medicine because they had to work with medicine from the garden, basically.
What was her name?
Hildegard of Bingen.
Ah, I've heard of her.
She was a Renaissance woman.
Yeah.
She was a composer, linguist. Mm. She was an administrator. She created her own language. She had mystical visions. She was a pharmacist, a medical healer, a gynecologist, and so forth. Really incredible.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. She wrote the first book on male and female sexuality and how the baby is formed and delivered and so forth. Really incredible. Mm. And we discovered simply a lot of really incredibly sophisticated people, even surgeons, many surgeons already 15th and 16th centuries who had to work with the means available. But we also have a lot of chroniclers who talked about the problems of nature, danger, flooding, the Black Death, and so forth. So life really hasn't changed that much. The question is how you interact with the natural environment. And I think they had a different, more symbolic, maybe more intuitive way of looking at nature and might have lived in a better way than we do because we seem to be so divorced from nature today. Mm-hmm.
And there was a very close tie to spirituality with nature.
Very, very strong. You can see it in paintings. You see it hear it in music, in literature, and religious texts. But really also very concretely, medical treatises, medical tracts, surgeons' handbooks, and so forth. So we have lots of really interesting information.
You also contributed to a recent article about women sometimes had to turn to violence.
In cases of
domestic abuse.
Yeah, domestic abuse, or to simply put, rape. There were so many, of course, at that time, of course. And the legal system at that time was just, well, they didn't have DNA. So if you have statement against another statement, the man said no, she says yes, then God somehow has to...
It's kind of her word against his.
Exactly. And, very, yeah. and we still have that today. Yeah. Happens sometimes. And so mm-hmm. they resorted to divine intervention at times. And so they had a, like a combat between the man and the woman. Him, for example, standing in a pit and she outside. And he had a different weapon than she had, maybe just a club or something like that. And many times the woman won. And then... could well be. So we can laugh about that a little bit, but at the same time, it gives us a good sense how much women were much more respected and mm-hmm. that, let's say, sexual violence against women was absolutely harshly condemned. If the perpetrator was apprehended and convicted, then death penalty was secured.
Mm.
So we should not sort of take populist opinion. All was bad and all was negative. Rape happened then. Rape happens today. And they tried their best for the women to defend themselves.
Mm. Mm. That's an area that we think, again, that this is, the domestic abuse is more of a modern horrible thing happening, but certainly happened then, too.
We have lots of discussions and a lot of actually negative comments. I found a beautiful little story just for entertainment. This mm-hmm. late 16th century couple just gets married. They march into the church. The priest smiles at the young bride. The new husband thinks that they had an affair, so he hits his wife in the face right there.
What?
Terrible. And the authorities are so aghast, they grab the guy and throw him to prison for 2 weeks just because he committed domestic violence.
Yes.
So it was not tolerated.
No.
Of course it happened.
Hmm.
But the question is how the authorities, how the public responds. Because we as people are violent. So for a society to survive, we need to have control mechanisms. And they were in place at that time as well.
Another area, and I don't have a lot of time for this, but you feel very strongly about what's going on in the Middle East. And
yes.
You have talked about America's failed approach to Iran. I have in front of me a letter I believe you submitted to the Arizona
yes.
Daily Star.
Yes.
What was the bottom line on that piece?
The bottom line is that we do not understand in our daily news the real powers behind the scenes. So we have, for example, Hamas, we have Hezbollah, we have the Houthis, we have Boko Haram, and so forth. All these radical terrorist groups, they're basically financed by Iran.
Mm-hmm.
It is basically the global conflict between Shiites and Sunnis. So Iran versus Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And the war in Gaza, for example, is used by Iran as sort of a mask, a face to hide their own interests. And what we do not really fully understand is that all these conflicts with Israel, they have nothing mm-hmm. to do really with Palestinians and Israelis. That is a war between Iran and the United States.
Mm.
That's sort of the bottom line.
And so Iran has all these proxies.
Absolutely, everywhere. They pay for them. And remember, Iran is heavy in the production of drones. They deliver thousands of drones to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Russia uses the drones against Ukraine. So it's a cycle. It's a very complex matter. I'm trying just to alert the audience that we need to understand news in a wider, deeper context. It's much more complex than the sort of...
And it's not just the Middle East. You mentioned the Procol...
Yes.
...group, Procol Harum or...
Boko Haram in Nigeria, for example.
Yeah.
Al-Shabaab
Africa.
In Somalia, everywhere. The Islamic terrorist groups, just like in Germany, mm-hmm. there was another terrorist attack.
So you're suggesting to readers and to listeners, think about a bigger picture here.
That's the one thing.
Yeah.
But what I really like to say is that there are realities, and we cannot meddle in mm-hmm. Iran. We need to start working maybe with Iran. It's, of course, a very difficult process. But the total confrontation with Iran
mm-hmm.
only feeds the flames that fire up there in Iran. And I think we have many different options to try to talk to them and maybe use more forms of respect. They have their own interests. Respect those. Of course, it's very difficult to talk with a country that is ruled by religious fanatics.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that. But all our efforts, let's say economic sanctions, just don't work.
All right, Professor, we will see you next, we'll see you in September.
Very good.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure. Dr. Albrecht Clausen with us on The Buckmaster Show. On behalf of the professor and John, engineering and producing our program on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everyone well today.